Hey guys, what is up? Welcome back to what is the final season of Flourishing with PTSD, a podcast designed to help normalize conversations around mental health, specifically in the context of PTSD, also known as post-traumatic stress disorder. If this is your first time tuning in for an episode, first of all, I would like to personally welcome you. I do advise that since this is the final season, that you do go back to earlier episodes before listening in on this season. If you are a regular listener or someone who occasionally pops in for an episode here and there, welcome to you as well. My name is Manda. I am the host. This is as good a time as any to let you know that I am not a medical professional in any capacity. I am not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I'm also not a lawyer. I just am a girl who has lived through her fair share of trauma and is well on her way to healing and living her best life. And as always, I will put a general trigger warning on today's episode, so please take a moment to check in with yourself and see how you're doing before deciding whether or not to continue. You know, it has been really important to me in the final season of Flourishing with PTSD that we really capture the movement of healing and how, while yes, healing is not a linear process, progress still happens. Even when we backtrack, even when we have low moments, the progress is still happening. And tomorrow can be better than yesterday. And maybe you will feel better than you did yesterday. Maybe you'll feel exactly how you did yesterday. But the point is that even in those moments, the progress is actually still happening. And you know, this podcast has been so fortunate to have so many voices and so many different stories, which means that there is so much opportunity to check back in and see how people are doing since we last spoke, which is why I am thrilled to be welcoming back Zanette Leader. Zanette, thanks so much for being here. Please reintroduce yourself to us and tell us a little bit about what you've been up to since the last time you were here.
Hi, Manda.
Hello, hello.
Thank you so much for inviting me back to your podcast. I also had a lot of fun last time. We talked about a lot of things and, you know, it was my first time and it was really enjoyable. So thank you for that. So I'm supposed to introduce myself to you guys and I'm like, oh my goodness, what am I supposed to say? Okay, so my name is Zanette. I might be the only Zanette you ever meet. Let's see. I am fun-loving. I love to be outdoors. I love to be outside, specifically in the sun. I like hiking. I like biking. I like adventure. I like dangerous things, maybe kind of, sort of. That's what my mom says. But I don't think skydiving is dangerous. I think, like, that's just a normal thing. My husband and I have been together for like a while. We had an anniversary recently. What was it? I think it was nine years or something, and then 17 together or something like that. And we have two little girls. How old are they? Oh, yes, they're 2 and 5. And they're giving me a run for my money. And on the internet, a lot of time I speak about what it's like to be a mom, specifically as a survivor parent, as someone who has gone through sexual abuse as a child, because I feel like it's a lot different than those mothers who haven't kind of gone through abuse. It's just a different, it's a whole different thing. And I just felt like there was a void. I didn't feel like anyone was talking about it, although I was sure that there were millions of women out there who were mothering from that standpoint and from maybe that fear or from like that journey, just trying to get it together and getting it right. So yeah, I think that's me in a nutshell. Hope I got everything.
That's a well-rounded nutshell. I'm a big fan. And also, you know, I do have to say, I'm definitely getting the adrenaline junkie vibes from you with all of your fun loving, like dangerous loving fun activities. Like, good for you. I mean, like that's what keeps this world going round. I'm like, I need to stay safe in my house and never leave.
Well, that's good that, you know, we're different, you know?
Exactly. Cause then I can have friends like you who will motivate me to go out and do stuff.
Exactly. You know, and you could be like, Z, let's just stay in like, today and just, you know, relax.
Yeah.
Totally.
Exactly. Well, and I do have to say that when you were here for the last episode that you were here for, I gotta say, like, I still remember it so vividly when you talked about, okay, like, when it's time to ground and time to just, like, reconnect with yourself, like, go outside and let your bare feet touch the grass or, like touch the earth. And I was like, ooh, that's so good. And I can't tell you the number of times since you were on the podcast that I did that. And it has truly been one of the very few things that oh my gosh, that was, like, a golden little nugget for me. I was like, this really does something for me that nothing else does. Like, wow.
It's true. And I tried something recently. I went outside barefoot in the grass, but the dew was still wet and it had been a hot night. So, like, it was just even more, I can't explain, but just more calming and grounding and more centering and just, I just felt so much better. Like the first step I took on the dew-laden grass, it was just, I can't even, it was good.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. That sounds amazing. Oh my gosh. So Zanette, when you were here last time, we talked a lot about your journey of being a survivor to being a survivor who is now a mother and how you were navigating that, which I personally cannot imagine how you do it. So I applaud you in every way possible. But when we recorded that episode, I remember feeling so inspired by your vulnerability, and I was so grateful to witness your story and your experience. And, you know, I've personally been experiencing a shift within myself that has been motivating me to really dwell on this idea of moving into whatever this next chapter of life looks like. And it's not like I woke up one day and I felt healed or magically better, you know, but I felt this realization that I've been feeling consistently better than I used to, you know, like my baseline has shifted up a little bit. So like much better than compared to where I started my healing journey, which was rock bottom. And maybe it's a sense of settling my nervous system a little more, which will in turn allow me to focus my attention on new and other things. But one of the things I'm excited to, oh my gosh, words. One of the things I'm excited to talk to you about is how we can take these experiences that we've been through, all of the tools that we've picked up along the way, and we get to share all of what we've learned so that hopefully we can protect and empower the people around us. And I feel like you have been very vocal about that, especially with your children. And can you remind us, like, what kind of conversations you're having with your kids to help them be aware of their rights and their boundaries as young human beings?
That's a good question. This might seem like a long-winded answer. There are a few things. And I'm not just having these conversations with my children, like my husband and I, we're not just talking to them about it. I've taken on the task of also speaking to their grandparents. So our daughters are fortunate enough to have both sets of grandparents who definitely raised my husband and I totally differently than what my husband and I are attempting to do. And I've had a few conversations, and sometimes I wonder why I keep trying, because I'm met with so much pushback and a lot of questioning and a lot of, well, I never did that. And, you know, it's just a lot. It's a lot. And yeah, it's a lot. But we do speak to our parents, mostly me, though, because I don't know, my husband just doesn't want to get caught up in the fray. So he's just kind of like letting me handle it. He's like, yeah, you have the personality for that. So, for example, I've spoken to both sets of grandparents about like autonomy and what that looks like for us as a family, what consent really is, and like how we can approach them when they're feeling a certain type of way, because you always hear like, oh, you're crying, be quiet, you don't have anything to cry about, like, you know, why are you making all that noise? Like, there's so many things that I think contribute to allowing a child to either feel empowered or not feel empowered, and how that can allow them to be safe or unsafe. So it's not just one, you know, little small thing. Now, for things that we actually do, feelings is a big one for us. Now, from infancy, I've frequently had conversations with them about how they feel. Like, for instance, you have a baby and you put them in the warm bath water and you're like, oh, do you feel that? This feels warm. And, you know, just little things like, you know, how this feel. Or when you're about to change their diaper, I'm about to change your diaper. You might feel a little cold. And just letting them, you know what a feeling that they might feel is and what it might be called. So allowing them to have space for their feelings and to be able to adequately express themselves. Now, that is much easier to say than actually practice, especially when you have deeply feeling children. And our five-year-old is such a deeply feeling individual. And like, oh my goodness, I feel like ripping out my hair every now and then. But you know what? I know that the way that I treat her and the way that I'm allowing her to feel and express herself is going to pay off in the long run. So I found that feelings and emotions tend to become more and more complex as we grow, because for me, it was much easier to parent a 1, 2, or 3, or 4-year-old. And then like five came and like nobody told me about age five. I'm like, oh my goodness. And more care just has to be put into like the time and how I'm helping her understand and express her emotions. Now, also body autonomy is paramount in our home, because we want them to know that they're the boss of their bodies. And we try to practice that daily. Now, correct anatomical names. For me, that's pretty easy to do because my mother taught us the correct names. She always made it a thing like for you to know the correct names and not to use like pet names or, you know, and it was never something funny. We never made fun of our bodies or anyone else's bodies. My parents never spoke about, I hear a lot like, oh my goodness, that person looks like this or that person looks like that. That was never a thing growing up. So I was raised that way and that's the way that I am. So this part has not been difficult. But when we teach children like the correct anatomical names, and that not just their parts, but everyone's parts, it helps them with the awareness of themselves and like ownership of their bodies. And I mean, I'm not just teaching names. I think sometimes we forget we should teach the function or functions with the names. Because that kind of helps them navigate if there's like a scary situation. Like, that's not what that is for. I know what that's for. That's not what it's for. And that goes back into feeling your feelings and expressing yourself, because not every child, most children aren't going to be like, that's not what that's for, or you need to stop. That's something that you kind of learn and develop over time. Now, consent is ongoing. It's an everyday thing for us. So my husband and I have found that it's much easier for our girls to understand that they're the boss of their bodies, like of their own body. But when it comes to acknowledging that others have that same right, it gets a little tricky. Now, I don't know if any of my family members are going to hear it. Okay, some of them might, but whatever. I would like to give props to my father-in-law, because I have heard him speak to the five-year-old several times about reminders. So the two-year-old, she's very vocal as well, and she'll tell her sister, stop or no, or something along those lines. And the five-year-old will just keep going. And I will hear her grandfather say in the other room or upstairs or wherever they are, hey, did you hear what your sister said? You need to acknowledge what she said. And then he'll remind her, you don't like when someone does that to you, or when you ask someone to stop or to please do something, you expect them to respond appropriately. And that's what you have to be doing with your sister, although she's two. So going back to that first thing about talking to grandparents and to those people who are in your children's life, there you go. The first couple of times I was speaking to them, I felt like I wasn't getting through. Man, I was hurting. I was like, oh my God. This is not working out. This seems a little awkward. And like, naturally, I'm not an awkward person. And I find most situations that other people find awkward, not awkward, but it was just, it wasn't working out. But see, time and patience and practice, you see what can happen. So, yeah, so it consent, like it goes both ways. My five-year-old loves to push boundaries. She's really, really good at that.
Oh no. And can I ask you, you know, like when you're having these conversations with the people involved in your children's lives, you know, does it, I imagine like when I imagine those kinds of conversations, like it's really hard to just maintain that instead of kind of, you know, like you protecting your children in this way is a boundary that you're also setting for your children to help protect them and include the family in that conversation. Does it ever feel like, how do I want to ask? Like, is that ever something that you feel self-conscious about? Or like, am I doing the right thing? Like, am I making too big? Like, do you ever kind of like almost like not victim blame, but kind of gaslight yourself into thinking like, I'm making too much of this, like, ugh.
I would say no, because I will see little things that, like in the grandparents' interaction with their granddaughters, I will see little things that I don't like. Mm-hmm. And so I make sure that when I have these talks that they're not frequent at all. They're like maybe twice a year at most. When I talk to them about it, I include that in things like, I don't know, I don't feel badly about it or feel like I'm overdoing it specifically with talking to them, mm-hmm. because you got to think about who's around your children. For some people, it might not be the grandparents. They might not be a part of their lives, or they might not have any. It might be an auntie and uncle or a godmother or an older someone else that you trust that's mm-hmm. in your kid's circle that they often spend time alone with, you know? So for me, when I was talking to the grandparents about everything, like the parenting, it was giving them a little bit of background history on myself and my childhood. And it was letting them know the things that we're not going to do and why we're not going to do it and what we're going to do instead. Mm-hmm. So I tried to give them examples, and like every now and then when I hear them do something, I'd be like, yeah, like I will say it to them. Like, that's perfect what you did. And nice. I think that's encouraging for me when people do it. So I do that for them.
That's amazing. I love that. That's incredible. So we've touched on feelings being a big one and helping affirm kids in like your children and feeling their feelings and naming feelings, having control over bodily autonomy, correct anatomical names, consent.
There's two more.
Yeah.
Like they're less, I don't know, black and white for me. Mm-hmm. Like it's okay to, I just want to say, it's okay, guys, if we don't know what we're doing. That's literally the point of life. We're figuring it out. Okay.
Yes.
So checking in with my kids sometimes is easier than, yeah, it's just sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. So it's a bit more nuanced now that the five-year-old is experimenting with twisting the truth and injecting her imagination into like simple conversations. But normally it's like asking before and after we go somewhere, like, how are you feeling about it? Or what are you looking forward to happening? And, you know, when it's the time, wherever we are, is done, it's like, well, did anything fun happen? Did anything happen that made you uncomfortable? You know, is there anything you want to talk about? But something that I have been practicing, I honestly haven't done it more than a handful of times, guys, my bad. But it's something that I really want to be doing every single time they have a play date or go see cousins or friends or anything. It's just to verbally say the ground rules to everyone present, adult and children. Mm. Just a little reminder, like, okay, we're here to have fun. And I want everyone to remember that you're the boss of your body. And while we play, we want to be safe. So we want to remember X, Y, Z. Okay, have fun. You know, just as a little reminder. Now, if you're partnered and you have children, I just want to say, you're not always going to agree on everything. And this is something my husband and I don't really agree on, because he feels like sometimes I'm overdoing it, as in like, why would you remind them, you know, privates are private, or why would you remind them that in a playing setting? Like, why would you, like, you know? Mm-hmm. But as someone who hasn't gone through the things necessarily that I've gone through, he doesn't understand where I'm coming from. I just want them to remember that we're here to have fun, and that's great. But there's some things that are off limits. Like when you tell your children, you could do whatever, but don't turn on the TV right now. It's just playtime, you know? Mm-hmm. There's parameters to everything in life, and I feel like reminding them of those parameters is okay, and it creates a safe learning and playing experience for them. That makes sense.
And I'm really glad that you bring that up, actually, just like, you know, different philosophies on parenting within the same parenting team, you know, because mm-hmm. I think that that's something that I imagine I would struggle with, is if like we disagree on, you know, something like you know, setting a parameter or just a reminder. And I've had conversations with other parents, whether it be my own or just other parents that, you know, I know and I'm familiar with. But, you know, it's like, well, context, like if you're talking to kids specifically about, you know, like the birds and the bees conversation or like, you know, things like that, then let's talk about that. But otherwise, it's kind of like removed. And it's like, well, let's remember that these things happen anywhere. And like, it's about access, you know, and it's access. And, you know, and children need those reminders, because otherwise children are very like, not limited, but just like restricted to like a one set focus of, oh, we're playing, so we're playing. It's not like we're playing and my boundaries are still intact. It's just like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly that. And then as like myself, things happen to me with older children where that shouldn't have been a thing and unsupervised, because come on now, parents, especially back in the 80s and 90s, who is sitting there watching their kids play? Nobody.
Nobody.
God, parents wanted a break, okay? So we were to fend for ourselves for an unlimited amount of time. And so, yeah, I just wanted... Yeah, you got it. You got exactly what I was trying to say. Yeah. The last thing that I will say, if I were to give myself a grade, I would give myself a C, is on how I can really help them understand secrets. So unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to have a conversation with my in-laws about secrets. Unfortunately not. A couple weeks ago, it was my father-in-law's birthday, and my mother-in-law came and she was talking to us about like the decorating plans and getting the cake and the food and everything. And she used the word like secret. And in my head, I'm like, oh my God. Oh. But like, I didn't want to like ruin the moment, but that's like something that I still need to talk to them about, and how we're approaching like secrets versus surprises and why that's important. Mm-hmm. Because I think just like small children, every age needs to know why you're doing something. Why is it that we're doing it this way or we're not doing this way? A why helps you understand and approach it in a more wholesome way. And for everybody else, you know, child predators or predators in general, they depend a lot on children to like keep secrets. Or they might say, this is our little secret, or you can't tell anybody, you'll get in trouble or I'll get in trouble. And that always translates into what is a secret. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed with the 5-year-old, kids talk a lot, and sometimes they might just be using secret to mean something harmless. And it's just trying to like help them understand. So like I said, I give myself a C on this and I'm working on it. And that's like what we're doing. But I'd also like to say, I read a lot of the books to them about these different topics. So like courage, consent, body autonomy and feelings, just to help reinforce what we're practicing at home and to see the pictures and to see what it might look like to say, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't need a hug right now. Or no, stop. I said no. Or, you know, this is how I'm feeling today. So yeah, books are great, guys.
That's amazing. I love how that's something that is so like easily integrated. And, you know, I work with kids from, you know, 6th grade to 12th grade. And I have to give them that talk every year like teachers do about, you know, like what to do if you're in an unsafe situation, and kind of give them empowering tools to be able to say something if something is happening to them and how to recognize a dangerous situation. And one of those things that we're trained to teach the kids is the secrets versus surprises. And the way that I like to, you know, like define the difference is, you know, a surprise is something that is good because it's going to come to light. Like there's a plan to tell people.
Yes, everything. Yes. That is something that I did hear. Like the surprise has an end.
Exactly.
There's going to be a point where everyone is going to know about it. And it's like a happy thing, a happy feeling, a happy experience. Yes.
Yeah. And then if it's a secret is something that is not going to be told, well, like there's a very good chance that there's harm in that, and it could be harm to ourselves, and it's a harm that we don't see. So it's like, again, like you have to go back to reinforcing, oh, well, good thing that as a child, my mom taught me about feelings and how this is making me feel. Oh, it's making me feel bad. Well, that probably means that it's not a good thing to keep secret. So I love that I'm hearing you say those things, because that just reinforces many, many good things about how maybe I would want a parent someday, or, you know, like I have a goddaughter, like how I might want to have those conversations with her, you know, and her mom, or, you know, things like that are just like really I feel very empowered within that. Thank you for sharing that.
Right.
So I love that. So those are really great conversations to have with your kids. How do they respond to those? Like when you talk to your kids about, like, let's say the 5-year-old, because the 5-year-old is talking more. I mean, when you talk to them about consent or, you know, secrets, are they is she responsive? Do you feel like slowly she's picking up on it, or is she just kind of like, oh yeah, whatever, mom? Or like, I'm very curious to know how a 5-year-old registers that, because I've never been up close to those conversations like that.
Okay, so your question is how does it work? Wait, can you ask me that again?
Yeah, no problem. How does your 5-year-old respond when you're having these conversations with her? Like, is she kind of like, whatever, mom? Or, okay, mom, yeah. And will she, like, do you see her kind of like applying that? Or is it at this point just kind of like putting it out there and she might come back to that learning? Like, where's she at?
I think it's a mixture of all, but less, okay, whatever, mom. I think she's taking a lot of it in. And like I said, like, just talking about it is not her thing. She's a visual learner. So that's why, like, the books and, like, the little charts, like, really come into play. Because, like, the books that they have on the market now, they're lacking a bit. I might have to add a little spazzle, sparkle, nice, dazzle to it. But the books that they have, a lot of them are stories, actual stories that a child would want to, you know, would want to know about.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Because, I mean, you gotta do something that will make them want to be involved in that, I guess, which is a good thing. You know, like, stories that they want to hear. But there's also another element to it as well, where maybe there's things that are uncomfortable to hear that they still need to hear. You know, like, it's going to be an uncomfortable conversation, but, like, it's something that's essential, you know? So I hear that.
Got you. Yeah, so the books are really helpful, and I do get more feedback from her and even them, like the 2-year-old too, when they're seeing the pictures. And because then you get to talk about the character, you get to talk about the story setting, you get to talk about the climax of the story, you get to talk about the conclusion, like, what do you know about, like, what, you know, it's more in-depth, it's more exciting for them and for me.
Yeah. And I mean, can I ask, you know, so you're a survivor who is, I'm assuming, like many of all of us, you know, are prone to triggers. And, you know, like, I can imagine there are times where this might be really hard for you to kind of navigate, you know, as you're watching your children grow. So how does having these conversations with your children impact you as someone who has been through these very real experiences that resulted in your rights and your boundaries being violated at such a young age?
I think I often wonder if I'm doing the right thing. Like, am I on the right path? Like, am I focusing on the right things? My intention in the right place? Raising them with the ultimate goal of being, like, well-informed, feeling adults. Well, not adults really yet, but feeling individuals who will be, you hear what I said? Will be the first generation to not experience sexual abuse or any abuse or assault for that matter. That's like at the back, like that's like the goal. That's like, you know, that's what I'm working towards. And because of that, even though, you know, I might be triggered at times, I still know that I have to continue in some way. I might not have to go as, you know, hardcore as, you know, my personality might be. I could just tone it down, be more gentle, be a little bit more nuanced. But it's got to get done, because who's going to do it? Come on now. It's on me. It is. Yeah. But then when I'm sharing, or I don't know. Once in a while, I'll get sad, though. I'm not going to lie. Once in a while, I'll get sad and I'll wish that I, you know, didn't have to feel this way, or didn't have to like go so hard and make sure that I'm teaching them as much as they need to be taught to be empowered. But then what would be the flip of that? Being kind of naive and not knowing any of this at all, like, right. Oh my God, I never knew that could happen, which is how a lot of people are. Nah, I know this ish could go down and mm-hmm. this is not going to be going down here. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I don't know. It's a two-sided coin for sure.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. And that naivety that you're talking about, like, I resonate a lot with that because, you know, when my experience happened, I was aware of, you know, sexual assault, but it was kind of just like that happens in movies, or that, like, I had this very, like, false narrative in my head of what that looks like. And let's remember that majority of these cases happen between two known people or more, you know, and that's something that I'm really trying to help identify within like this narrative of, like, you know, that's not how it works. It's all about access. It's about, you know, it doesn't take a big, strong person to work a family dynamic, you know, or work a relationship. Like, that can be someone who's just well with words, you know, like, and access, instead of jumping someone in an alley, you know, that. It's just, you know, breaking that stereotypes. And I think having those conversations with your kids, that just gives me so much hope, because as a young person who's, one, had these experiences and sees the world for what it is, I cannot imagine taking on the responsibility of parenting right now. And so...
Neither can I. Oh, my God.
But, like, hearing you talk about this, though, like, that gives me hope. And, like, you are giving me tools that I can have if one day that changes and I end up having children. I mean, that gives me hope, because right now I kind of view it as, if I don't have kids, then I don't have to worry. But then I think about the incredible human beings that you are nurturing and what they are going to offer this world. And if there are other parents out there that are doing similar things and having these conversations, like, what a beautiful world in the making.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh, I just want you to know that inspires me so deeply. So, like, I have goosebumps right now.
Thank you for telling me.
Yes.
Some days I'm like, oh my God, Zanette, what are you doing?
Oh, keep going, girl. Keep going. Yes. So, I mean, did anyone have these conversations with you when you were young? Or is it your experience that has kind of informed you? You know, like, how are these conversations serving you now as a survivor who's teaching your children?
So I'm the middle of three girls, and my mom definitely had conversations with us as children. They were usually about making sure no one touched us inappropriately, and if they did, to let her know, like, right away. She'd emphasize that it didn't matter, like, who it was. Family, friends, somebody you think, you know, it doesn't matter who it is, you know, let me know. That's what she would say. She would emphatically say, like, she'd emphasize, it didn't matter who it was, even if it's your dad, do not be afraid and let me know. Mm-hmm. I want to say, just for the record, that my dad did not molest me, but my mother was speaking from her own experience. So she wanted us to know that, like, nothing is off limits. Like, if you want to tell me, just let me no, like, I'm gonna, don't worry about it. Just tell me. Just, I want you to tell me, right? Mm. So, I mean, I heard what she said, but I mean, okay. So I think what was difficult for me as a child was feeling like, and often getting the messaging from not like one adult or two adults, from like my parents and other people, is that I was bad. They never used that word bad, right? But I really just wanted to be good, and I felt like I would be blamed. I was often blamed for things that were out of my control. And I always kind of got the messaging that I wasn't good enough and I need to try harder. And so in my childlike brain, it was like, well, if I'm not good and I'm bad and I need to try harder, then maybe... Not that I never thought those things were my fault, but I thought I would be blamed for them, because I was blamed for so many things. Like, I was, girl, listen, all of those girls out there who are women now with diagnosed or undiagnosed ADHD in the 90s, who were unmedicated, listen, We went through it, okay?
Oh, my gosh.
It didn't display itself in the typical way because they're doing most of their studies on boys. And, yeah, it was just a lot. So I was often blamed for a lot of things that were out of my control, and I just felt like this was another thing that was out of my control, for sure, yeah. And this was another thing that I thought I would be blamed for, and I'd rather just continue to try to be good and try to listen and sit and do what I was supposed to do and focus and pay attention. So, yeah. My mother did have conversations, not really my dad. I don't remember my dad ever talking about that stuff with us. Because, again, it wasn't his experience, so that wasn't really on his radar. But my mom really tried to, you know, talk to us about that, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just never felt comfortable. And then when I did feel comfortable, that didn't work out. It didn't work out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. So a fair amount of time has passed since you were a child and going through these experiences. What are some steps that you have taken on your healing journey? You know, a big part of the season is centered around the journey of healing as we prepare to wrap up the podcast. You know, like any successes or failures that you can share that you've encountered along the way?
I can try, but I like to tell everybody right now that I'm actually really struggling, like really, really, really struggling, but not depressed. So to me, that's a bit hopeful because usually if I'm struggling, I'm just like, it's just not. Yeah. But I'm not depressed right now. I'm just struggling. I don't want to say just like it's nothing, but, I need a new therapist and it has been very difficult for me to find a trauma-informed therapist in my state. Yeah, because I need a therapist who's experienced. I don't wish to be with any therapists that are just starting out or have never had to deal with my complex past and present and future. There are certain things that I'm looking for in a therapist and I have not been able to find it. Unfortunately, people out there, it's kind of like dating sometimes for some people. Like you just kind of don't always find the right fit right away. And it's okay to go elsewhere because for some of us, like me, I have to pay out of pocket for my therapist. So if I'm going to be paying these big bucks, Amanda, I need you to be A1. You know what I mean? But success and failures, I think I was really excited when I was younger, when I was in university, to like start therapy. And I really thought group therapy would be like really good. Mm. And I had to interview for the spot. And it was just a lot to get to it. And I had to like take the bus. Was it 2 or 3 hours? Whatever. Each way to my house. It was far. And because I didn't have a car because my dad was like, you don't need a car. I was like, sir, I need a car. But anyway, that's beside the point. And it just was not it. And I think I will try group therapy again because I don't know if I'm a people person, extrovert, introvert. I know you might say I'm like an extrovert, but I think there's something to be said about community and being around people who can, you know, connect with your struggle and connect with, you know, your tenacity and trying to get somewhere where you aren't yet, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to explore that at some point, but yeah, I'm looking for a therapist for my one-on-one support because I need it, like.
Yeah. And I just want to point out, you said, you know, a big part of my goal with this podcast has been to just illustrate that you never really know who you're encountering when you are encountering someone in terms of, you know, like when I encounter you today, you know, you're so bubbly and you are laughing and you are so like easy to talk to. You're so forthcoming. And that, and then you say, you know, and I'm struggling, like, and I'm actually going through a really hard time. And I just want to, first of all, just validate you and just that, like, I'm so sorry that right now is such a hard time for you. And I am holding space for that for you. And, you know, like, I commend and also I have empathy for this part of you that has to kind of kick up the energy to be this bubbly, you know, happy, like humorous, like self, when like on the inside there's still like, and I'm looking for a therapist, I'm looking for a therapy option because like this is not a good time for me. Like, just pointing out that I'm encountering you as a happy, bubbly person and you're going through a hard time. And I wouldn't, you know, taking that at face value is something that we've got to get away from. And just like assuming that if you're presenting to me as happy and fun and like light, that that's all there is. You know, that's another big part of emotional intelligence. And again, this conversation around feelings and just having empathy for the human experience, like this is so big, you know, it just extends into everything.
You're right. Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, I said that. Yeah, that's what I said. But yeah, I am having a bit of a difficult, I'm in a little bit of a rough patch. And And I'm coming to terms with some feelings that I didn't realize I was feeling. Mm. I was like, wow, were those suppressed for a few decades? Like, oh, mad. But they're like familiar. And now I've been able to put a name to the feelings. So it's giving me an idea of the work I need to do with help. Because I know not everybody does therapy. And a lot of people find different things in order to get their help. And you do you, boo. But for me, I feel like a little bit of talk therapy would be very helpful. But last year, oh my gosh, let me tell you something I discovered.
Ooh, I'm ready.
Along with like the type of person I am and my personality. Adventure therapy. Have you heard?
Ooh, I mean, I'm not surprised that you're saying this, but go on, tell me more.
Right. It's basically what it sounds like. last summer, my husband and I, just the two of us, we went on this luxurious vacation, and I was like, okay, I need to become a millionaire so we could do this all the time. But we're in like those Polaris four-wheelers going like 100 miles per hour on the desert floor, like in like Los Cabos, and like hang gliding, and we were on jet skis, and we were doing so many things. We're rock climbing in the desert, then rappelling down, then like traversing over like this tightrope, and they're like poisonous snakes in the water along with piranhas. And then we're like eating authentic Mexican food, like in like this cave. It was just, listen. So I realized, that's why you like danger. It's not just getting my blood pumping. It's giving me these endorphins that I don't regularly develop as someone who has like a fast paced mind, like, you know, you guys. And I realized that it's a calming for me. I know it sounds counterintuitive, but doing these things that are like seemingly dangerous, that give me adventure, that I'm feeling something new, I'm experiencing something new. It's like heart pumping, and it's just like, it helps ground me in a way that I didn't know. Because I always hear about like grounding and being calm. It's more like, quiet.
Yeah. Well, and
which isn't always helpful for people like me.
Right. Well, and that's kind of how I imagine, you know, like people always kind of laugh at me when I say, you know, I have PTSD and I struggle, and like I'm afraid of the dark and this and that. But then like I'll stay up late watching like true crime, or I'll listen to like these crime junkie podcasts and everything like that, which, I mean, shout out, because I love crime junkie. but you know, and they're like, well, why do you do that to yourself? And I'm like, because it like kind of gives me the thrill, and it like matches the energy that's like trapped inside. It's like I get to live in that suspense a little bit, when like the suspenseful energy that's living inside me does not match the phase I'm in where like nothing's happening. Like in the absence of chaos, I'm a little lost. And like, this is like a healthy way for me to place that energy. That's not like, you know, a bad way to do it, you know? And so like when you talk about like channeling all of that into adventure, so that like, it kind of like matches the circumstance to the internal energy. Like, of course that's going to like, because there's a parallel.
Listen, on the inside, like, y'all who are listening, bruh, like a tornado, hurricane, what else? Everything else, like, it's just going. Like, I'm always going, and it's not always easy to calm down. So if sometimes my environment really needs to match the turmoil. Yes. Well, it's not always a negative thing, but the energy that is within me. So yes, I get you on that. Yes. So yeah, some of the things like I feel like in my healing journey are going great, and other things not so great. And right now, I know I'm not doing great. I'm not feeling great, but I know I'm not going to feel like this forever. And the only reason I know this is because I've experienced not feeling good and feeling good. I've experienced rock bottom and then kind of rising out of that slowly, slowly, slowly. And one day you realize, oh, I'm not depressed. Oh, I don't want to kill myself today. Oh, you know, like there's just, it's like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. This building of positivity that you don't really realize is happening while it's happening sometimes. So yeah.
And that's another thing that I love. Before we get to the next question, that was so good. You said, you know, I know like I'm in a tough time right now and I know that it's going to get better. And that's what's kind of helping me. And I will tell you, I had some significant health struggles this last year, and my mom had vocalized to me that she was so like impressed with how I was handling it because it was really hard to deal with. And I'm doing much better now, but there was a time where I was just, it really was like so hard. And she was like, I'm really in awe and like impressed with how you're handling this. And I was like, well, I've been around the block with these feelings before, not in this specific context. Oh my gosh, no. But I had been listening to this Taylor Swift song. And I think it's in Forever Winter when she says, too young to know it gets better. And then she kind of goes on. And I like was listening to that album as she when she had re-released it. And shout out to Taylor's version because she is the queen. but I had been listening to that and I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, like 19-year-old me thought the world was ending and that was it. Like that was the first time I'd hit true rock bottom. And I was like, there's no way out. And I kind of started getting those intrusive thoughts and feeling fearful and just lost. And I was able to get out of that with support, with help, with therapy. Like I was able to get myself out to the point where we're at the last part of the podcast now where I felt this shift. And I really do feel like, okay, like you said, if I go through these feelings, I know I'll be okay because I'm gonna get better. You know, like I know that it's hard right now, but I'm old enough now to know it's gonna get better. So like, how amazing is that, that we have that experience now to share and say, you know, we have deep empathy. We've been in the same ballpark as someone else who comes to us and says, I don't know what to do. I think I'm like, I'm at this like precipice right now where I don't know what to do now. And it's like, let's slow down. I've been there. Like, that's such a gift to give to someone.
It's true.
You know?
It's true. And also shout out to music therapy.
All day.
Music, moods.
All day.
Yo.
Yeah.
Yep. I hear that loud and clear.
Big facts there. Big facts.
I hear that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, for real. So kind of circling back, does having these ongoing conversations assist in your healing, or do you feel like it hinders you because it's kind of keeping it at the forefront?
I think most of the time I do feel hopeful, and it's because I know I'm moving towards a goal, and other times I feel extremely sad. And I think it's in part like being raised by like a kind and resilient motherless mother who went through a lot of abuse as a child, who really worked hard to make an amazing life for herself and her family. I feel like sometimes, I don't think about it often, but I'll think about it sometimes, like even with her intentional parenting, I was somehow, and not just me, but I was still vulnerable and abused. So I just feel like what would be the point of giving up? Because if I gave up, I would not just be giving up on myself, but the two children, and I spoke about having children the first time I was here with you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would be giving up on myself and them and all the generations that may come after me, you know, and that would not be fair. So I do have fear creep up. And usually it's like, are you you know, you're not doing enough, like, or are you doing too much? And it's just giving me mixed signals. And sometimes I just have to be like, yo, shut up. I'm just going to keep trying.
Yes.
You have to arrest these negative self-talk, guys. You just can't, like, just let it just keep going. And, yeah, sometimes I just cancel that out. Try not to listen to it. So
yeah.
The ongoing conversations, and not just conversations, because they're 2 and 5. So a lot of it is just interaction. Mm. I'm sure there'll be more of the conversations in 10 years, but a lot of it is just interaction with. I do want to share something with you guys.
I'm ready.
I want to share 2 things with you about how things can be like, not it. Then you're like, Lord Jesus, help me, please. And then, like, they become it. So the first thing I want to share is I don't do all the caretaking with our children. So what that looks like. So, for example, I find it really triggering to take my children's clothes off. Like, I don't like to change them. So I don't do bedtime routine, if that makes sense. So I'm not helping them take their clothes off. I'm usually not the one giving them a bath or a shower. I'm not the one getting on their, you know, pajamas and, you know, putting on their hair bonnet and, you know, tucking them in and reading them their story. That, like, in the, like, dark room and all that, that's not me. I kind of know where some of my strengths are as a parent, and I'm aware of some things that are a bit too triggering for me. And so I want to talk about interactions with my children that can be a little bit too much for 2-3 years, probably as long as we've had the second one. That has not been something I've done. And I have spoken with my husband about why it's important that you take it on, babes. Mm. Plus, they miss him during the day. Come on now. Mm. So this summer, unintentionally, I had some breakthroughs. And I've given them a few bubble baths.
Wow.
And gotten them all ready for bed. And it wasn't a problem. It wasn't an issue. Also, in the back of my mind, I didn't have it. I wasn't thinking about why it would be an issue. I was just trying to go along with it. Like, okay, yeah, we got bubbles in the bathtub. We got your toys. You know, make sure you scrub your armpits, get your belly. And, you know, okay, you gotta clean your butt crack, your vulva, your belly button. You do that. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't as hands-on as it would be like with an infant. Mm-hmm. They're older now and they could do much more. So it was like a lot easier. But I'm not telling my husband like that I'm going to take over. I was filled with relief. I was filled with relief that, oh, okay. There's been some progression. This is good, Zanette. This is good. And I haven't shared this with my audience online, but I will soon.
Zanette, yeah. That's amazing.
I know it might sound like nothing to some people, but for me, that was like...
No, that's huge. And like the fact that you felt safe within doing that, and that it just like, it came from a place of love and not like, I'm going to test this out. It was just like, it's just going to happen. And like, it was reinforced to be a good, safe experience. And now you have that to draw on later. And the fact that that doesn't mean that every single time is going to feel like that, but like...
Right.
But that's something huge to celebrate. I mean, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank
wow.
you.
Wow. Like, oh my gosh. That's so great.
And then the next one is a little more nuanced. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for myself, I was molested by a few people, and one included a female who, in my opinion, like more like posh, like high heel, like, you know, more of a, like, I don't know how to, just, you know, into, like, the looks and whatever, always had, like, long nails.
Mm.
So if you've grown up with me or known me for any length of time, I have short nails. I don't know if it was part of just, like, being a tomboy or just being cognizant of the fact that I hate to see long nails. I love the designs, ladies. I know everyone's getting their nails done. I love to see how creative y'all can get with what y'all do and what y'all get done at your nail techs.
Amen.
But for me, it's just so triggering, like, when I see somebody with long nails. And then when I see, like, a caregiver with long nails, oh, it's just a lot for me, personally. Yeah. But maybe, then I was thinking to myself, well, maybe, like, I do like nails. You know, maybe I do. I just don't like what I remember when I see long nails. So Girl been growing out her nails.
Wow.
I know. This also might sound like ridiculous to some people.
No.
But it is just, it's my nails.
And they look gorgeous.
My nails are a part of me. I have long nails. My mother-in-law thinks they're fake, but they're mine.
They're gorgeous.
And thanks. Sometime, like once a week, I'll spend time, like, you know, filing them, shaping them, whatever. I don't really do nail polish because, like, I'm really sensitive to, like, the scent.
Mm.
But if I did, you know, I'd be making them all these cool, you know, designs. But it's just another reminder for me that, you know, there's, like, this healing. It's, like, might be cyclical. It might be going up and down. It can look different ways. And for me, like, this summer, these are the two things that I mentally can say, like, this is something I tried to do. And it wasn't like I failed, because there's really no failing when you try something. It's like I tried it, and I can see how doing these two things have been helpful. Because now when I see long nails, like, on my own hand, these are caring hands, you know?
Mm.
These are loving hands, and nothing, you know, like, I don't know, the opposite of how I have always viewed long nails or people, women's hands who have long nails. So, yeah.
Wow. Congratulations again. Like, those are two, like, really big things. Like, I mean, like, seriously, like, some other people might say that's so small, but no, like, how liberating.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So different. Like, I didn't know how I might feel. But yeah, and I didn't break them all summer. I'm like, what's going on?
Got strong claws. That's right. Oh my gosh. So, you know, there was a day that you decided to go public with your story, you know, and you speak about it on Instagram and on YouTube, and you've come onto this podcast and shared, like, really vulnerable experiences. Was there ever a time when you did not want to talk about your experience, and, you know, so that there was a shift that you experienced from not wanting to talk about it to talking about it? And if so, what led you to being more open to talking about it the way you do today and doing all of the advocacy work that you do now?
To be honest, I've always been an open person. Like, I don't know if you can tell, but... I feel like I've always been willing to discuss more challenging topics, even as, like, a younger child. And maybe that was more suppressed in a way, because you kind of know what's acceptable and what's not to say and to feel and to be. And a lot of things were or are controlled, as, you know, when you're a child, like, obviously things are controlled. And as you get older, you kind of come more, like, into yourself, and, like, me being into myself is more of an outward reflection of me stating how I feel about things, not in a way that might be harmful to others, but, like, these are my feelings. This is how I feel about this or that or whatever. So sometimes I'm fine talking about it, to be honest. And I think I go through periods where it's a bit, like, too triggering to talk about, like, in public, like, on the internet.
Yeah.
And then I might disappear. Like, right now, I'm sorry, everybody. I've been gone the whole summer. But, you know, things happen, and mm-hmm. It's okay. It's okay for me to, you know, reappear when I'm ready, and not just be pumping out content or sharing, and then being left empty, right? Because, like, totally. I said, I'm struggling. And I know some people, they really feel comfortable sharing when they're struggling. I'm more of a, when I'm getting through it, like, you know, like, kind of out of it, then I'll share, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you are so right. You get to take breaks whenever you know you need a break. No questions asked.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I'd like to share what I've kind of been avoiding. And I think I've been avoiding it because there's, you know, some feelings of inadequacy, and, you know, I feel a bit unsure and things seem a little ambiguous, but I wanted to take my platform to the next level, Amanda. Okay. Are you listening? Ooh. So
breaking news. We're hearing it here first, everyone.
Breaking news. So I want to talk more candidly about prevention and highlight step by step how I teach or empower my children from infancy to where, you know, we are now, which is like age 5, and obviously like in video format, because I found that, like, although I like to type, I like captions, and I like, you know, people like to see me, like, when I'm talking and interacting, and I'm just like, but why? Like,
because you are fun, you are gorgeous, you are so smiley, like, I love being able to see you. For those of you listening, I can see her right now, and she looks gorgeous. I'm just like, yes, queen, get it.
Thank you, Amanda, for the encouragement. I feel like she's boosting a little, but I will take it. Nah. Thank you. But yes, I'm going to be doing more in terms of obviously like Reels and YouTube and TikToks. I'm trying. I'm going to put myself out there in a way that I haven't before and not accept the, I don't want to use the word excuse, but I don't have a better word, but not use the challenges, either real or imaginary, that I come up with as to why now's not the right time or I can't do it right now. But I think you asked also, like, what kind of keeps me talking, or, you know, why, like, why do I, you know, continue? I think there's times when I'll get a DM or a comment on something that I post, or I'll get even a text of people I know, and they'll thank me for something I said online that I didn't think was a big deal. And it'll always be something around like my motherhood journey. And then I'm like, damn, I made a difference. What? And not just in my kids' life, but in others, especially others who are parenting or thinking about it. Or I even had a cousin, and this is when my Instagram stories would go onto my personal Facebook. I kind of changed that, but she was like, she's about 15 years older than me, and her kids are, you know, much, much older. And she's like, all these things that you're talking about, and I know you're just like randomly sharing your life, but it's like so authentic, and I just wish we were the same age, and I wish I had heard about these things before. Just way before, because my kids are basically grown now and I didn't have the opportunity to do these things because I didn't know these things were possible. And like everything that you say kind of just makes so much sense. And just like my mind is blown every time you share something. So thank you for that. And I didn't even realize like she was watching. Does that make sense? Like, I don't really look to see who's watching, because then I'm like, oh my God, someone's watching. I just kind of go with it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And that's something, too, to point out, is that something that you were talking about earlier that I want to emphasize, and I think as I'm hearing you talk as a mother, I think about my mom and the conversations that we've had, and my dad, too, but a lot, my mom takes this on, I think, a lot, is that, you know, she feels like she, and I'm trying not to put words in her mouth because I don't think she's ever said this directly, but I can kind of feel it from her, is maybe the sense of like guilt, like she failed me for how these experiences fell upon me. And I have never once been like, if you had done this, then I would not. It's kind of like almost like victim blaming, like her, like she feels like she's like maybe like gaslighting or like victim blaming herself for like things that have happened to me. And it's like, no, like that's not what these conversations are about. And that's not, I'm not carrying that into the podcast to like do better than you. You know, it's learning from where we've been and just continuing forward, because, you know, and I took this training about how to train adults to be safe adults around children, and they articulated it so well. It's like when we have these conversations with adults about how to be safe adults with kids, the catchphrase is, our goal is to learn how to stop or prevent childhood sexual abuse, in the sense that like we're not always going to be able to prevent it, but we can hopefully stop it, you know, if it's going on.
And that safe person.
Yeah. And something that I think my parents forget is that they maintained this safe space for me to come to when I needed it. And that's, I think, something else that you are advocating for as well and are aiming to present to your kids too, is like, you know, we are giving you the tools, like you've been given the tools that we know at this point in time how to give you. Mm-hmm. And that's the best we can do. We can only do the best with what we know. And we get to take what we've learned from our personal experiences and pass them on. And then your kids will get to learn where maybe the holes are that exist today. and pass that on. And so I just want to say that for the podcast too, is that parents, if you're listening to this and your child has maybe experienced something, like, the only fault that exists is the fault of the perpetrator and anyone who helped conspire those things. It's not the fault of the child. It is not the fault of the parent. It is precisely the person at fault that perpetrated the actions. And it's just moving forward. We have control over what we do moving forward, but just to validate
that. Inaction is not an option as parents and as safe adults.
Exactly. Yeah. And can you say that one more time? Because it cut out a little bit. I want people to hear that.
Oh, yeah. It just came to the top of my brain. Okay. I said inaction is not an option once these individuals disclose information to us, because, wow, they thought so highly of us that we are a safe individual. They thought hard about what they can do, who they can tell, how they can get out of this. And they thought of us. Inaction is not an option. We must move forward with it. Okay. We must move forward with it. Don't make the mistake of people who I felt were safe adults and then they did nothing. We don't want to be like that.
Right. You know, like, with all those conversations, you know, your story and being public, I mean, you said you've always kind of been an open person. How do you feel these days with your story being more public, like on the internet, on Instagram, YouTube, talking about it here on the podcast? I mean, how has that been for you? And were those feelings expected? Was there anything that wasn't expected?
Those are good questions, but I think honestly, I didn't know what to expect. When I started sharing my story, it was for me. Like, it was for Zinette. I was sharing because this is what I'm going through. And hey, if I can share what I ate for lunch, then I can share, you know, this. Like, this is how I'm feeling. So it was for me just to publicly document how I was feeling at the time, what I was experiencing. I started with a blog and then kind of like Facebook, IG, and then kind of spilled over to YouTube, but I'm mostly on IG nowadays. Mm-hmm. I will say that my therapist at the time and my mom to some degree seemed worried about what I'd be sharing and the intention behind, like, me sharing what I'm sharing. Like, why are you sharing that? Like, you know, what will you be saying? And to me, honestly, it seemed like they were worrying about me, like, talking about my story. And I didn't really like that. I'm like, what's the big deal? Like, if I want to talk about it, I'm going to talk about it. Yeah. I mean, if they had told me no, they didn't. But if they had said no, I would have done it anyway because I'm Zinette. But anyway, it seemed like they were worrying and about me talking about my story versus worrying about how talking about my story would affect me psychologically. Mm. And I've realized that it's really the latter. It wasn't really them, like, worrying about what I'm saying or how I was going to be saying it. It was how it was going to affect me. Because sometimes, like, it's not just reliving it. It's just, I don't know. It can be a lot. It's not something that you necessarily always want to think about, the event or events or how you felt or different triggering points. It's not always something that you want to experience, but sometimes, damn, it's what you're living. And if I want to share it, I want to share it. Just for a little FYI, my mom is a PhD, so she's a clinical psychologist. So I wasn't, like, not going to hear what she said. I
was Shout out to listening. Your mom for being a baddie. Yes, queen.
Being a baddie, right?
Yes.
Get it, queen. Sure is. Everybody in my family is. I'm more of the, yeah, okay, isn't it?
Girl, you are also killing it. You are equally
in my own way.
you are killing it, girl. You are getting
Daddy
it.
Daddy level, don't know which one. Not theirs, but it's okay because it's all good.
It's okay. Everyone has their own directions.
Exactly. And mine has just been this twisted road with thickets and mountains and hills and valleys.
It's a journey.
And, you know, it's just a lot. But it's all good because we all go through things. It just makes our journey more interesting.
Yes.
But I'd also like to say, when it comes to sharing, there are times when the feedback can be overwhelming. And I think that's why I don't share as much on Facebook, because I find the population on Facebook is a bit older.
Yeah.
And they are I don't want to say dying for, this is a better metaphor I could use. They are longing for the chance to talk about what happened to them and how they feel. And I find it gets a bit too, because I've seen some people's posts that's public and shared, and it gets a little too much. I don't want to just know all these details. Like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So for some of the like biggies I share on Instagram. And earlier this year, I made a reel and it kind of went viral. It has like it had 1.3 million views, like,
girl.
I'm like, what does this mean? And it had like 3,000 comments. And I was like, huh? And 4,000 shares. I was like, so people are sharing it. Okay. And like 3,000 saves. I was like, oh my gosh. And 90,000 likes. I was like, oh my gosh. And what, I mean, you might be wondering, what was the reel anyway, right?
I'm like, tell me more. I missed this for some reason, or maybe I saw it like in the early days, like
maybe you saw it. Okay, so it was just like one of the viral sounds of like someone laughing and being like, oh no, I don't think so. So it was like, I think it was ha ha ha, don't be hilarious. I don't know. So my point of view, it was a point of view one. I know it was a POV. You're at a family function and the family member who molested you walks in, and it's me like laughing like, oh, you got me effed up or whatever, putting on my jacket and picking up the then 1 year old and leaving. That's what it was. It was like, not me.
Yes.
Because, and I think the caption, I was talking about the fact that, you know, family doesn't really understand. They always try and tell you, you need to repair this. This person needs to be in your life, or they'll lie and say they're not going to be here, and then you show up and they're there, and then they expect you to, you know, whatever. And the comments were all these people talking about, girl, me too, or I didn't know, I thought I was the only one, or it's been happening to me for years and I don't do nothing with my family, or you know, just little stories, not like in depth, but just little snippets of like a community, right? Mm. And so it was like these stories that the survivors were commenting or leaving in like a little DM. It was like jaw dropping for me, but something amazing about that viral reel. And I was glad it wasn't a reel about nothing to go viral. You know, sometimes you're like, what is this on here?
Yeah. Like at the time of this recording, the biggest thing on TikTok right now is the corn song with that little boy.
Oh my gosh, yes.
It is the cutest thing ever. Oh my gosh, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's corn.
Exactly. So when it came to this one going viral, I was like, the thing that was amazing about it for me was the ownership of our stories and the realization that none of us were alone in our journey, like being survivors. I had a few people been like, I've never told anyone this before. And they'll give like a little paragraph. And then you'll have like 10 people replying to them, encouraging them, or, you know, just being like, yo, you're not alone. You know, just, you know. And like part of me wants to like build this community. But another part of me is kind of listening to like my old therapist and kind of like what my mom said about like, you know, just being careful, because do I have the bandwidth?
Yeah.
Or the training to be doing that. I don't. So then I just share what I can, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be a facilitator. No, I don't have the degrees and the, you know, I don't have all of that in that specific thing. I got one degree. I did.
Yes, queen. Woo!
Yeah. I survived one.
But there you go.
So that's my answer. A little long-winded, but yeah.
That's okay. And you know, and I think you don't need a degree to tell your own story, right? And
you really don't. You're right.
Yeah. And I think that's what I've learned throughout the course of the podcast is that, you know, like a lot of the DMs that I've gotten have been, you are so much easier to understand because you're going through it versus someone who's trying to regurgitate a textbook of what I am or what I've been through or the results. And that's been a huge value to the audience is that, you know, it's easier to understand. Now, do I have the training to listen to someone who's in crisis or distress? I have some, not too much. So I've kind of gotten to learn this, like, okay, this is what I can handle. And oh, here are resources that I can refer them to.
Right, when they
are in that distress or they're in that crisis and they need them. So like, I love how you said, just like kind of self-examining, like what can I handle? And the fact that I'm still like, you're still learning, okay, what all can I handle? And you've already developed the skill of like, and I recognize when I need to take a break and I'm not sorry for it.
Correct.
You know, like that's a very important skill to have.
Yeah, and I'm practicing it more and more, trying to get it right.
That's amazing. So, I mean, continuing on with the conversation about the healing journey, I mean, what does living with that experience that you've had as a child, where that was, you know, you are experiencing these traumatic events and now you have to heal from it, like, continuously, you know, what does living with that experience look like for you now as an adult? And has it changed over the years?
I'll be honest, I don't really know how to answer that question because I feel like I don't know what living like with it looks like because I'm just trying to live. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But it has changed over the years. Like I said, sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down, sometimes I'm going around. I'm just trying to make it. Yeah. I think... Okay, this is going to sound a little weird. Okay, I've been partnered for a very long time. So I think having a partner, though, that may not have experienced any of what I have, but over the years has gotten so much better at allowing me this space or even coming into my space when I invite you into my space to, like, help me with it. Like, damn, if I need a hug or if a particular type of hug or if I need you to just talk to me or I need you to say something which is off topic so I can get out of this funk because I'm just thinking, I'm ruminating about this thing too much and I just need to just not be on it. It's helpful in that sense to have that partner. And for some people, it might not be a partner. It might be like a best friend. Shoot, some people talk to their cats. It's helpful to like have like a person. Now, I'm not saying this that I tell him all my problems and he gives me feedback because that's not his role in my life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Got to, you know, remember people's strengths and their weaknesses and what their actual roles are in their lives. But yeah, being a person who has, see, the thing is, I don't know what it's like to not live this life. So I can't tell you what it's like to not live this life. I don't know if I said the same thing.
Yes. Just,
but,
profound. I like it.
It's just some days you don't think about it at all. Some weeks you don't think about it at all. And then like last night, why am I crying? Mm. Why? Oh, that's why I'm crying. Okay. Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me hear you finish crying because I got to go sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not so much like suppressing what's going on, but letting it flow. If I'm expecting my kids to feel their feelings, they need to see me feel my feelings. The ones that might be seen as positive and the ones that might not be seen as positive.
Yes.
So if I'm grumpy, I'm having a grumpy day. I might not say I'm having a grumpy day because I'm remembering X, Y, Z. I'll just be like, man, I'm having a tough time right now. And I need y'all to go paint your room, okay?
Nice.
Something like that. You know?
Yeah. And I love how you said, you know, I'm going to let my children see me experience the full range of emotion.
Yeah.
Because like otherwise we're telling them that they can only present certain emotions in public and then other ones they need to like isolate for. And it's like, no. I mean, like, yes, you can. And like, there are times when you should, but those are conversations to be had. And like, mom is a human being. Oh, mom's gonna have a tough day too. Okay. Oh, mom told me I need to go play in my room because she's having a tough day. Oh, I'm going to remember that when I'm having a tough day.
Exactly.
I'm going to remove myself or communicate. Hey, mom, I'm having a grumpy day. Okay. Like maybe I'll.
My five-year-old, I mean, she's good at, man, I need some time by myself. Her awesome. Sister, her two-year-old sister's like, what? No, you've been at school all day. I miss you. Like, let's play. Like, what are you doing? The younger one can't say the older one's name properly, and it's so funny. But she'll always call her name, and I'm like, no, you know, we closed the door. Your sister's having her a long time. Mm-hmm. Just need to decompress after kindergarten. It's
yes.
a lot of work.
It's a rough time out there.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I hope I answered your question.
You did. You absolutely did. So we're coming up on the end of the episode. What words of wisdom can you share with listeners who are in the thick of their healing journey right now? What do you want them to know?
I want you to know, I don't know you, but I think you're awesome. Why? Because I think everyone's awesome in their own way. And some of us realize that when we're 50, some of us know that when we're five. It just, you know, it depends. But I want you to try new things and keep going. I know people say this all the time. Oh my God, don't give up. And it just sounds so, oh my God, don't give up. Shoot, I want to give up. I want to lie in this bed and I don't want to do anything. Nobody talk to me. Nobody touch me. Just feed me and just leave me alone. But I mean, if that's something that you need to do, then do it. But how long are you going to do that for? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't want to just do that forever. Just find that space to be able to feel what you're feeling. And sometimes not just feeling what we're feeling, but identifying what that feeling is and maybe perhaps why we're feeling that way. And sometimes it's as easy as doing that and removing that thing that's making us feel negative, that thing or that person. That thing or that person, you guys. I know it's harder when it's family, but
Yeah.
I did it and you can too. Now, we weren't created to be fearful, nor to operate in survival mode. I think that I have been out of survival mode for like, I don't know, couple months. I'm serious. I've been living it for a while and it's not it because we're just always, oh my gosh, oh, the next thing, look at, oh, everything's scary. We're just fearful. We're just trying to keep it together. That's not what we're created to have a fun life, okay? So,
Yes.
no.
Yes.
So I know some people are like, everyone needs therapy. And I was talking to a therapist, not as a client thing, but they're like, yeah, not everybody needs therapy. And I was like, really? Are you sure about
You
that?
sure?
But I think what they were saying, that's I think what they were saying was not everyone needs the same type, okay? There are so many different ways to discover who you are and what you need in life. There are so many different ways, but I do vouch for, and I think it's important to speak to somebody who that's their role, if that makes sense. That's their education, their experience, that's their career, that's what they do. There are different types. We've spoken about it on this podcast today, like music, adventure, talk
Yes.
therapy. You
Yes.
know, there's so many different kinds, guys. It's art therapy. And you know, it's so much more broad than we realize. And I don't have them with me. Oh, I should have. But there are so many places that we can go to get things that are might not be as much money or
Yeah.
actually free. So yeah, there are a lot more things going on. And yeah, I think you're fabulous. And you guys, we just have to keep trying. Remember, the healing journey that we're on, it's actually lifelong. And it might seem cyclical at times, like it's like a cycle, like we go here. Oh my God, I've been here before. Okay, I know what this feels like. Okay, you know, after this rock bottom point, last time I did this and this is what helped, or this is not what helped. So I need to try it a different way. And like every day we build on the things that we've learned from before. Every day we build. Every day we build. You know, we just got to keep trying. And I'm talking to myself too, okay, guys?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Yeah, we say this stuff for us too. Big time,
For
yes.
sure.
Yes. Well, Zanette, thank you so much for coming on the podcast again and just for showing your beautiful face, letting us hear your voice. It's just, I cannot tell you how good it is to be talking to you again. I have missed you, and
Oh, thank
it's
you.
so great to see you. And where can people find you? Where can people keep up so that when you make all of those reels that are about to freaking go off, like where are we finding
About to
you?
pop off. I'm about to pop off. All right,
That's right.
everybody. So listen up. My name is Zanette Leader. I know you don't know anyone with this name. So let me spell it for you. My IG is Zinette. My last name is Leader. You can't mess that up. Follow the leader, LEADER. So it's just Zanette Leader, you know? On there, you know, you'll find the links to any other things that I'm doing. So if I start back on my YouTube, if I start back on my blog, like I will let you know on IG, but that's where I'm at. That's where I shared like the simple things, the real things, the raw things, the things I'm hurting about, but I don't cry on there yet. I'm not there yet. But yeah.
Hey, and when you do, like, we are ready to love you through it, and probably cry with you, TBH.
I know, right? Or I might post and delete. We'll see.
There
We'll
you
see.
go. Like, might delete later, but for now.
Thank you so much, Manda, though. Thank you.
Oh.
Thank you. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. And thank you so much for this invitation back. I really enjoyed my time here. Like I said, it's been a hard struggle. for me recently, but this has been a highlight, so thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad. So as always, everyone, thank you so much to all of you who listen to the podcast. I hope that it continues to be a source of comfort, knowing that you are not alone in what you are going through and that healing is possible and that it won't be like this forever. So I hope it continues to be a source of education around these topics in a way that is approachable and accessible to all, and that this podcast hopefully has accomplished my goal, which is to help end the stigma around mental health struggles one conversation at a time. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.